always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this super-duper special Saturday episode by you guys. Look, I'm not going to lie. The taste for Lakers content, Lakers coverage, rumors, reports, whispers, buzz, all of those things has been off the charts, so I figure we may as well ride this wave while we can. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about centers. That's all I ever talk about is centers. DeAndre Ayton is going to opt in. We've been assuming that this whole time here when I've been talking about offseason scenarios. Marcus Smart is apparently going to opt out. Also something that we've been talking about a ton here as well. So in terms of, you know, what the Lakers were prepping for heading into the summer, no surprises there. However, Smart's opt out and Houston's reported interest does complicate things just a little bit. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Today, a couple of tidbits have kind of dropped by way of the NBA rumor cycle. First, apparently, according to Jake Fisher, Nikola Jokic not signing his extension is apparently on the table. And I would imagine the outcome of this summer will go quite a ways in deciding how that situation plays out. So that's worth monitoring. Rob, don't get any ideas. Let's not kick the can again here. Right before I went live, we got a report that Jonathan Isaac has been waived, and then the Orlando Magic officially announced it a second ago. He is, always injured and yet still pretty damn talented. So he would be an interesting candidate there as well. And over the course of the show, you guys are going to leave questions and comments and stuff like that. And I will get to as many of those as I possibly can. As Brian Walters is saying, smash that like button. I would greatly appreciate it. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. And then turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube. And if you guys are listening to the show in the morning I'm going to try to edit and post this thing right away like I did or have been doing basically this offseason so far. Please subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but they are all perfectly fine with me. Let's see. Also, today's show, as are all of our shows here on YouTube, is brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of free lineups on Prize Picks whenever you sign up. Use that promo code and then make a $5 lineup of your own. Let's go ahead and dive on in, starting with a couple of player options that are going in the direction that the Lakers thought they were going to go. Right at the onset of the summer, there was some noise that I didn't think made any sense, but there was some noise. It was like, Ayton might decide to opt out and see if he can get another year at roughly the same salary that he was getting last year. He outperformed his contract. Bill Duffy is a very powerful manager. He could try to use that leverage on the Lakers to get an extra year out of them. I thought that was really weird. I thought that would have been a really weird decision from Ayton, and didn't ignore it, didn't laugh at it out of hand, but did kind of question it a little bit. And then kept on asking, and then finally it kind of did kind of arch back the other direction where, you know, over the last week or so, we started hearing, okay, yeah, they tested the waters and the waters were real cold. And so DeAndre Ayton is expected to opt into that player option that he has, where he'll be paid a shade over $8 million. And frankly, perfectly fine number for DeAndre Ayton and makes him very tradable. Like I was talking with Pete and Jovan in our group text and for the Great Western Forum, which we got to record another episode of pretty soon. But I was talking with those guys and I was like, happy that we're getting this kind of an update right away. I'm sure the Lakers have known all along, but you know, it's kind of nice that we can now throw Ayton's $8-ish million into trades for centers who would start over him, right? Just in case he you know, the Lakers would be a little concerned that he wouldn't handle not starting very well. Just in case the team that would be trading the Lakers wants a center to kind of be a placeholder after they trade away the guy that the Lakers want. I can't think of any reason that this would be bad news, to be completely honest. And at the worst case scenario, right, you go into next season with DeAndre Ayton on your roster at an $8 million expiring contract, when this guy is, you know, probably in the lower end of the list, but is a bona fide starting caliber center making a very reasonable amount of money. Sure, there are very, you know, real questions about the head that sits on his shoulders, but like at the end of the day, this dude was very productive for the Lakers last year, had good playoff games for them last year. And I would say that, you know, for the Lakers, from the Lakers standpoint, this is a guy who they would be wise, I think, to, utilize one way or another, whether that's in trades or whether that's on their roster next season. So Ayton, I would anticipate, and I know the Lakers are hoping for him to be either a backup or involved in some kind of a trade, this summer for the A-list center they are looking for to appease Luka Doncic's request. Sorry, anytime my phone vibrates a few times in a row, I get a little nervous, but it's just Discord. Which, by the way, if you guys are interested in joining the Lakers Lounge Discord, I guess I could drop that link here in the comments as well. Or somebody who is in that Discord, drop that link and I would, and we can, you know, you can invite people that way. But yeah, the Ayton here is again, you know, a bit of news that surprised absolutely nobody. And ourselves included, if you guys have been watching the show every day, which if you have been, thank you. And now we get to kind of move on with some trade options with him, which, you know, if you combine, it's kind of ironic that it played out this way, but if you combine Ayton and Vando and Dalton, you actually arrive at roughly what Miles Turner makes. You also arrive at roughly what Cam Johnson makes, which is another interesting option here. But from the Lakers standpoint, if you basically turn those three guys into Miles Turner's salary, you add the center that you, or at least a center that you really, really need to add, and then you would still have all the flexibility that you currently hold, right? Especially if you choose to renounce LeBron and Rui Hachimura. In this event, right, I think the team that is most nervous about their guy being given a big, you know, offer sheet is probably Denver with Peyton Watson because of the tax situation there and Stan Kroenke's stance on paying the luxury tax. He doesn't want to. So, like, if you trade for Miles Turner and you do elect to pursue free agents, You know, by way of LeBron James and Rui Hachimura's contracts coming off of the books, you could go and make the kind of offer to Denver that would really make them sweat. And at the very least, you know, could start a conversation with them about a trade for Cam Johnson or a trade for Aaron Gordon or, you know, Christian Brown, if that's somebody that the Lakers are interested in. But I think, you know, trading for Miles Turner kind of at the onset of the summer, you know, that gives you some real flexibility and at least partially checks the most critical box that the Lakers are trying to check. So I think that is a scenario that if the Lakers start to feel, and this is kind of the sense I'm getting, but if the Lakers start to feel like Kessler isn't an option or Jalen Duren isn't an option, I think they would circle back to Miles Turner, get that taken care of in shorter order, and then, you know, make a decision on LeBron and Rui also relatively soon, so that you have cap space that you could maybe re-sign Marcus Smart using after he opts out, and depending on the number that, you know, Houston comes calling with. So that's a, you know, path that the Lakers could head down. You could also, by the way, talk about this path with a Daniel Gafford as well, or a Daniel Gafford or a PJ Washington, one of those kinds of players. If in fact the Lakers and Mavericks are doing business with each other again, we already saw them make trades on draft night. So maybe that page is turned and that bridge isn't completely burnt for the Lakers. So yeah, Ayton opts in. I would imagine his contract is going to be one that the Lakers look to utilize in trades very, you know, basically as soon as he is officially opted in, which, by the way, has to take place before, let's see, today is the 27th, tomorrow is the 28th, Monday is the 29th. That is when those guys, you know, who have player options have to make decisions on them officially. And when that happens, I would assume the Lakers will have already begun having conversations with teams on ways that they could utilize Ayton's contract if, in fact, they don't want him to be their center or their starting center again next season. All right, the next scenario here, or the next decision here that does kind of complicate things for the Lakers, is Marcus Smart. And it doesn't complicate things in the sense that they are blindsided by the eventual decision from Smart to likely opt out of that contract. No, it it complicates things because this is somebody who was critical to their success on the court, was a key factor in their kind of team-wide culture off of the court last year. He is probably their only plus-level point of attack defender on the roster. They made a whole lot more sense when he starting last year and provided that point of attack the defense. And look, he's one of those guys who you just know, you know, if you're a playoff hopeful team, he's one of those guys who you just know is never going to be afraid of those situations and would likely even calm down the team in those situations, as they arise in the postseason. So Marcus Smart is somebody who the Lakers really, really, really want to bring back. Now they also are going to be careful about the number that they bring him back at. We will see if, like, Houston is willing to use their full mid-level exception on Marcus Smart, and what that would force the Lakers to maybe consider there. The Houston Rockets, obviously, last year signed Dorian Finney-Smith away from the Lakers, a move that they probably regret, given the way that played out. But yeah, this would be, you know, losing Marcus Smart would make it borderline impossible to have a successful offseason, because now you're talking about a major step back in a aspect of the game that you just do not have replacement level players on your roster with. You would then have to replace that while also taking a step forward with your center search. you would be doing all of that while you juggle the situations of LeBron James and Rui Hachimura. And it would just be honestly devastating to the culture that the Lakers built last year. He was a very big part of it. So this is somebody who I would expect the Lakers are going to work really, really hard to bring back. And not in, you know, whenever they bring him back, it wouldn't be like an immediate, all right, we can figure out a way to trade this guy. I think they would look to bring him back and add more point of attack defense. So we'll kind of see what comes of this situation here, but I just do not see a path or an avenue to a successful offseason that features losing Marcus Smart, and also, by the way, potentially losing LeBron James, and also, by the way, potentially losing Rui Hachimura. That is a lot of talent to walk out the door, and then, you know, that you would immediately have to, build out that group's production collectively, and then also find a way to get better. That's tricky, man. I just don't see it. The next one here that I wanted to talk about, the next situation here, isn't actually listed on the rundown. So I'm going somewhat out of order, but Jake Fisher, who is on Substack with Mark Stein on that Steinline, which I cannot advise you guys to subscribe to enough, but Jake Fisher apparently reported earlier today that Nikola Jokic could hold Denver's front office's feet to the fire here. He has watched that team grow kind of stagnant, and he has watched himself get further and further from a championship these last few years. And he might, and it seems as if he's looking at that situation and saying, this sucks. I don't see the future here. And at the very least, especially as all of the reports coming out of Denver are how Stan Kroenke is working really, really hard to duck the tax with a team that was already not good enough to win a championship. Like, you know, if you're Jokic and you've watched this team get worse and get older and grow stagnant, and then you have an owner who's sitting there saying, yeah, you know I have the best player in the history of our franchise, but also I like not paying taxes. If I were Jokic, I would do the same thing and be like, okay, well then you don't get my long-term commitment until you change that tune. So this is one of those situations that, is very volatile. If you're Denver, this is not somebody who I think you want to piss off in this spot. And this is one of those situations that you just know the Lakers are going to very closely monitor. Nikola Jokic is somebody who Luka Doncic has really, really wanted to play with. You watch those guys at All-Star games every year, and they're always fooling around and joking and pranking, and they don't approach the game very seriously together, but they do kind of like to enjoy those moments together. And it has felt like at some point we would start to get some noise about one of those guys considering going to the other guy's team. Or, you know, I guess if you want to do the Heatles thing, you could meet up somewhere and play together or, you know, with some other team that neither of you currently are on. But in this case, if you're the Lakers and you hear some of these rumblings about, Nikola Jokic not exactly being thrilled with the direction that the Denver Nuggets have gone, do you consider kicking the can again, waiting to see whether or not this guy ever becomes available? No, you do not. No, you absolutely do not do that. And the reason that you do not do that is because, as we've learned so far this summer, the best pathway to, you know, flexibility and optionality and all of those keywords that Rob Pelinka likes to use when things are going well and he talks to the public, the only pathway to that, just my opinion here, but it seems to be playing out this way. The only pathway to that is by employing as many good players as you can and having them on movable contracts that other teams are interested in having them on. And I don't think, you know, and also, by the way, it makes you better, you know, in the short term, to the extent that like a player looks over at that situation and is like, dang, they are always competing for championships. That seems like fun. Can I go do that over there with them? And so like the impact of that is twofold. So if I were the Lakers, I would carry out my offseason as I would always carry it out. I would do whatever I possibly can to build out the best roster that I possibly can. And I would do so completely separate of Nikola Jokic, maybe just maybe, you know, becoming available. And so like, I just, this is one of those spots. And by the way, every time one of these superstars become available, it's the same news cycle, right? The player becomes available. He says he wants out, or it's leaked that he wants out, and he's starting to look elsewhere. And the owner looks at multiple offers from some of the teams that this guy would actually sign an extension with. And the owner winds up taking the deal that, you know, helps him compete in the short term while, excuse me, adding picks in the longer term. And that's, by the way, if a player doesn't put their thumb on the scales and force their way to another team, thus allowing that team to get that player for pennies on the dollar. Like, far more often than not, and as we've learned here with the Lakers and Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, earlier this summer, far more often than not, the owner, with the ego that owner has, says to himself and his team and his fan base, yeah, we're losing maybe the best player that we've ever had, but also we can win. And then they learn like 6 months later when the season starts. Ooh, yeah, that's right. That Giannis guy was pretty good. But if you're the Lakers and Stan Kroenke, who has the kind of ego that Stan Kroenke has, if you're the Lakers and you could, you know, maybe, you know, acquire as many good players as you possibly can on contracts that other teams want, that either gets you the pathway to the draft stash that, you know, might convince Kroenke to get rid of Jokic eventually, that, you know, builds out a trade offer that Denver would maybe take a little bit more seriously, especially if Jokic is making it clear that he is done there. Like, to me, the you know, reaction to this from the Lakers is like, okay, cool, we are focused here, right? Especially, by the way, at a time where you are trying to prove to Luka Doncic that you are worth a long-term commitment from him. You know, and I don't think what the Lakers can do here, I don't think what Rob Pelinka can do here is be like, all right, look, we know that you wanted an A-list center. We know that we have missed out on competing for championships ever since you got here. But what do you think about playing with Nikola Jokic? And if we keep our powder dry, maybe, just maybe, we could turn that powder into Nikola Jokic. I think at that point, that would be such an immense risk that Luka might get frustrated, especially if you don't eventually land Nikola Jokic, as the Lakers didn't land Giannis Antetokounmpo. Like, that is, to me, it seems like the surest path to risking losing Luka for nothing. And so I would probably say, you know, for the Lakers, it's cool that is going on with Denver. You can, you know, I am going to have some fun watching the Denver Nuggets squirm a little bit, but take care of business. Keep the focus, keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing going into this season was building out the best roster that you could this summer, after waiting years for the opportunities that you had supposedly, you know, foreseen this summer. And any other focus is just a distraction. Also, as I mentioned right before we went live, Jonathan Isaac apparently, you're not apparently or reportedly anymore, the Orlando Magic have now made this official. They waived Jonathan Isaac. He had a partial guarantee on his contract this year, and then he had no guaranteed money for the next couple of years on that contract. So they waived him. Now they waived him outright, which means he gets all of the $8 million and he sits on their books for the $8 million that he was going to sit on their books for, the partial guarantee that he had. But they can apparently bring him back on a minimum contract, and you know, keep him while saving a little bit of money. I don't know to what extent Jonathan Isaac would be interested in that, seeing as this team just waived him and cost him money by waiving him. So, like, if you're the Lakers, look, you know, he's not perfect. He's always hurt. His politics are weird. But like, at the end of the day, like, I think that, like, you know, the point of this summer, or one of the points of the summer, was to get more athletic and to get better defensively and to, you know, to figure some of those aspects of your roster out. But look, if he is ever healthy, or when he is healthy, he does help with some of those things. And if you could get him for like the minimum or slightly above the minimum, you know, there are worse pathways that you could take, especially if you wind up trading DeAndre Ayton, right? Or if, you know, some team knocks Jackson Hayes's socks off with a crazy offer that nobody foresees right now. So yeah, I wouldn't love it. There wouldn't be enough. I would be very nervous all the time about Jonathan Isaac's injury history. Just like, by the way, I would be really nervous about Mitchell Robinson's injury history. But like, one thing that the Dodgers tend to do is they'll like layer injury risks on each other. And the thinking there is that, like, we only need, you know, like with their starting pitchers, they always kind of think to themselves, we only need like three of these or six of these guys healthy at any given time. And if we have a lot of money sitting on our injury list by way of starting pitching, then okay, we will be deep enough organizationally to make up for it, right? Now, you have to have a range of contracts on your books. You have to have, you know, you'll have the Shohei's who make a whole bunch of money, the Blake Snell's and the Tyler Glasnow's who make a lot of money, but then you also have to have prospects who are ready to come up and fill in those gaps just in case, or in the event that those guys get hurt. And that's what the Dodgers have essentially done. And here with Jonathan Isaac, you could, you know, if you sign a Mitchell Robinson to a mid-level exception type number, which is the number that I keep hearing for him, if you sign Mitchell Robinson to a minimum to that mid-level exception, and then you sign this guy, this Jonathan Isaac, to like a minimum contract, and you have Jackson Hayes on a minimum-ish contract, now all of a sudden you have depth in the event that one or two of those guys get hurt. So I would just say, you know, it would be an extreme buy low candidate. This guy at various points was one of the better defensive presences in the league. But whether it's because he likes to do his own research on his injuries or what, he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And maybe this is one of those spots that Rob Pelinka gambles on pedigree to go out and get the guy who has, you know, maybe his talent has slipped a little bit. And maybe with the Lakers investing as heavily in injury management and in therapies and medicine and stuff to the extent that they are apparently this summer, maybe this is a guy who's, you know, gamble you could put your thumb on the scales for a little bit too and get far more out of him than Orlando has gotten out of him the last few years. All right, let's go ahead and dive on into some of your guys's questions and comments and all of that good stuff. We did get a few supers, which means I get to play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! All All right, I'm going to scroll up to the top where, let's see. Wow, we had a lot of super comments. So I'm going to be here a little while. Get comfortable. Let's run. UNLV writes, can you still, I'm guessing this is supposed to say, can you still make the case for sending LeBron to the Cavs for Jared Allen, sending a first to Cleveland as well? How else are you getting a good center? I wouldn't send a first. Like I at that you're sending them LeBron James. And I think that, you know, this like Cleveland thing is I think kind of run its course with that core. LeBron at the very least, you know, offers that really good story and maybe makes them a better playoff team than Jared Allen does. It does impact their size. So maybe you send, in a separate deal, maybe you send like DeAndre Ayton over there for like Max Strus or something. And then in that case, maybe you send some draft capital there. But I still wouldn't send a first rounder and LeBron James for Jared Allen. Now, if they're cool with like a straight up one for one, perfectly fine with that. I think that makes a whole lot of sense for both teams. Makes sense for LeBron if he wants to continue making upwards of $20+ million a year, and if he wants to go home and all of that stuff, then you get, you know, kind of an appealing outcome for both sides there. Outside of that, like and by the way, I think if I'm the Lakers, I only do this if LeBron comes to me and says, I'm leaving, right? I still think the surest pathway to filling out the best roster that you could fill out this summer still involves LeBron James, especially LeBron James on a discount, which it seems he is almost certainly going to be compared to the caliber of basketball that he is still going to play next year. And the caliber of basketball that he played as recently as last season. So, or even this postseason. So I have been very consistent on this. I know that there's a whole bunch of noise about LeBron might do this, LeBron might do that. I saw that report that Shum said that the two sides haven't even spoken to each other and that the Lakers haven't even made him an offer. I think there's an explanation for that that I guess I can get into it. If you guys listen to the Hoop Collective, Brian Windhorst and those guys recently talked about how the term offer is like sacrosanct in the NBA, in that like they are very like it is they are very specific about the situations where they're comfortable, teams are comfortable using the verbiage offer, using the term offer. And so, you know, whenever those guys talk about, you know, the types of deals that teams are discussing, they'll oftentimes talk about them using the term concept of a trade or other similar terms to concept, but they will be very sure to not talk about offers that teams have made in trades. And I am of the belief that teams feel the same way about offers with contracts, right? Especially during this window where the Lakers have exclusive negotiating power with LeBron. If the Lakers make an offer to LeBron and he accepts that offer at a time where the Lakers are still milling over their options, whether they want to operate as a cap space team or if they want to operate above the cap, they can't make an offer to LeBron James. So I think this is a ploy from Clutch to like remind the Lakers, hey guys, still sitting over here, which I think is kind of telling of the situation. But I have been very consistent on this and I continue to you know, bang this drum. I think LeBron is going to be back with the Lakers on a 2-year, $50-ish million deal total, not per year. And the Lakers will operate above the cap and look to, you know, trade You know, those guys I talked about, Ayton, Vando, Connect, and first round capital to add another rotation player to their roster while using their full mid-level exception on, say, you know, a center or somebody like that. And then also use whatever room they have under the first apron that they would be hard capped at to bring back Marcus Smart, on a deal, you know, around $7 or $8 million or so, hopefully. And that would be kind of the roster that they go into next season with. It's not the most inspiring offseason that the Lakers could possibly have. It is the most risk averse, offseason that the Lakers could possibly have. But I think, you know, given how things have played out with the center market elsewhere, where I don't think Kessler is going anywhere, I don't think Duren is going anywhere. I just think that this is probably the path that the Lakers wind up taking, and that involves LeBron being back. But if he does go to the Lakers and say, guys, we had our fun, I want to go finish out my career in Cleveland, I think it would be a cool story. I think he would move further away from a championship. But, you know, I think in that world, both sides get something out of the equation, and they get to part amicably, and LeBron rides into that, you know, greater Ohio, or the greater Cleveland, Akron, Ohio, sunset. Which, do they even, you wouldn't ride into the sunset if you're riding north or northeast. So I don't even know what you would be riding into there. Like, maybe if you leave early enough, you could ride into like the sunrise, maybe. Let's see. The next question here that we have, the next super comment that we have here comes from Let's Run UNLV. Turner was way worse than Ayton was last year, by the way. Look, did you guys read some of the details that were about like Giannis's last season there in Milwaukee and how just terrible a situation that appeared to be? One of the details that came out of it, and I know that I can't quite judge because literally on the other side of this wall sits a golf simulator. So like I can't fully judge Doc too much here, but apparently Doc Rivers made the Milwaukee Bucks install a $90,000 golf sim for himself. This, by the way, it comes on the heels of some of the stuff that you heard while he was coaching and running the Clippers, that essentially he was like golfing like 4 days a week while he was not coaching enough and definitely not paying close enough attention as their lead basketball decision maker. So that's why that went, you know, horrifically. But yeah, like, look, if you want to try to argue that Turner has slipped athletically enough to where he can't be the rim protector that he used to be, and he can't move his feet well enough on the perimeter, and that puts into question or calls into question his ability as a defender. Honestly, fair. I'm not, I don't even fully disagree. I think that's a legitimate concern. But if the price is Ayton and Vando, whose contract you're trying to get rid of anyway, and Dalton Connect, who you know isn't going anywhere, might not even be in the league in a couple of years, or even in a year, you know, and maybe like a first round pick, you know, and maybe you might have to take Kyle Kuzma's contract in that scenario. Like, I don't know, the price is so low that I would consider myself interested. And again, if it pans out, if Turner isn't washed and it turns out that that situation was just so bad that, you know, everybody got touched by the stink, then, you know, it's just, you know, I think that happens all the time where a good player goes to a situation that is so bad and so just toxic that they finally get away from that situation and everybody remembers, oh yeah, that's right, that player was actually good at basketball at one point. You know, that happens all the time in the NBA, all the time in professional sports. I would also add, by the way, I would also add that Turner is like the guy who went on the record on a podcast to say that Giannis's unprofessionalism was something that, you know, made him kind of look around and be like, oh, so we don't have to take this seriously then. Oh, okay. And while that isn't a very appealing aspect of somebody's character, like you don't want to put that stuff on the record. I do like that he was aware enough of what a good situation looks like to be able to be like, ooh, this isn't a good situation. So I believe that Turner would turn things around a little bit. I think it would be a worthy gamble there, especially at the current price. And it also allows you to partially check that box while maintaining your flexibility across the rest of your roster. You turn, you know, money that was probably going to be useless next year in Jared Vanderbilt and Dalton Kincaid into useful money. And it's like, you know, DeAndre Ayton isn't a part of your big plans either. So I think it's fine. And maybe you take on Kyle Kuzma's expiring contract, which is also perfectly fine to me. Let's see. The next question here comes from Matthew the Sicilian, who writes, it's wild to me that Stan goes out all out to win with the Rams, but penny pinches with Denver. It's markets. You know, in LA, it's a lot easier to make a buck with your sports team than it is with in Denver. So I think that's part of it. But there aren't luxury taxes, I don't think, in the NFL. There's a hard cap that, you know, every team has to operate under. So I think that's part of it. I don't know. It's a great question. I'll have to ask maybe some of my friends who cover the Nuggets about Stan Kroenke, the owner there, and how he treats that situation versus with the Rams. But by the way, this is not unique, actually, where you'll actually see this sometimes with sports owners. Actually, you see this with Mark Walter, where the Dodgers are very clearly the thing that matters the most to him. And he also owns the LA Sparks and has come under criticism several times for how he runs things there with the Sparks. So, you know, you have different priorities. Somebody has to come first in this case. And some owners, you know, like we see this with the Saints, right? Their ownership group, where the Saints are clearly their top priority and the New Orleans Pelicans are also there. And it just makes things really complicated for the team, you know, that is not the favorite. Right. And, you know, I would kind of compare it to, Birds of Prey, right. Where, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever watched some of those documentaries, but sometimes those Eagles and Hawks and Falcons or whatever will only feed the stronger of the two offspring that they are trying to raise. And eventually one of those offspring dies. And there's one documentary that I watch fairly frequently where the one bald eagle, you know, chick eats the other one after it dies to get some of the you know, critical nutrients and hydration that comes from its sibling. And that's how it sometimes plays out with some of these pro teams, where the owner cares about one, uses all of the resources on the one, and the other one just kind of exists. And I wouldn't say, you know, gets cannibalized, but you know, certainly it's pretty rare that an owner is just outright successful sustainably across all of the teams that that owner owns. Oop, sorry, wrong button. Let's see. The next one here comes from BT Kingsley 5225. Need John Collins, small ball five, can rebound, and I'm going to say good athlete there, because I don't think you guys want me using the word. I don't want that clipped. But I think Collins is an interesting guy. He was somebody who the Lakers kicked the tires on last year with a Rui and like a pick for Collins swap. I do like that he's a lob threat as well as a floor spacer offensively. He's not very good defensively, but for the right number, like I think he would be interesting. I think the Lakers are going to have to be able to play five out next year, and he would allow them to, you know, to play five out. So I would say that, you know, he's a he's an interesting guy. I think he's probably pretty far down my priority list personally, because he is not a rim protector at all. And, you know, the Lakers are going to need a, you know, anchor big defense, a defensive anchor type big to make up for Luka and Austin on the perimeter. And he wouldn't really help you with that. But if he is, you know, somebody that you sign, you know, later in the offseason after a lot of guys are gone, I'm fine with it. And then certainly like next season, after he has already been signed, and in December when he becomes available, if, you know, he's still pretty good and he's on a reasonable contract, and maybe you turn like Dalton's contract into John Collins potentially, depending on what kind of team he goes for or goes to. I like the idea. I like John Collins quite a bit. I've always thought he's one of the more underrated players in the NBA. But as such, I would be perfectly fine if the Lakers circled his name to kind of come back to later in the offseason after they've taken care of all the things that they desperately need to take care of. AJ Hodge writes, at what trade can we make? Ayton and others for Ware and Turner with picks. Thoughts on Watson? I look, if you're getting both Turner and Ware, you're giving away all of your, you know, every first rounder that you could possibly give up, and maybe even a swap or two. He is Ware is somebody who the Bucks like a lot as a prospect that they can develop. He is cost controlled and very cheap, which is something that really matters to them, as they know they aren't going to be very good. So you don't, and if you're not going to be very good, then you want to be cheap, and he helps you do that. I don't think Ware is going anywhere. Remember, I reported before the Giannis trade went down that the Lakers were trying to get involved there to see if they could land Ware as part of the deal, if they helped facilitated the deal elsewhere. And they were told like, no, we're probably going to keep this guy. And, so that's how that played out. But those conversations have already happened. They're probably going to continue to happen. I just don't see Milwaukee letting him go when he's probably the part of that trade that they consider most valuable, given his raw talent, the position he plays, his contract, all of that stuff. He's probably the part, like the centerpiece of that trade coming back from Miami for the best player that Milwaukee has ever had or had since Kareem. So yeah, I don't think Ware is going anywhere. But as far as like what other trades, you know, I like Cam Johnson as a possibility. I've talked about Miles Turner. Basically, you know, what I've been doing is I'll go out there and I'll find a player on like a contract in the low 20s that has maybe a couple of years left on that contract that, you know, that team would be looking to move. And that's the type of player that I'm sending Dalton, Vando, and Ayton out for. And depending on the caliber of that player and the situation that the team that I'm negotiating with, that kind of dictates how much draft capital I have to use on top of the salaries that are going out. Is that it? Nope, we got another one here. Let's run. UNLV writes, the best free agents were already Lakers. We only have two picks and we don't have good salaries. Running it back is probably the best roster we can build. That's kind of the... Oh, Panama. Oh, he's offsides. That's kind of the realization I am coming to. And if that is indeed how this summer plays out, you guys are not going to want to miss this here podcast, because I am probably going to light the entire Lakers organization on fire, pour some gasoline on that fire, and then pee a little bit on the ashes that are left behind, because it's not just that you had a disappointing offseason at a time when you promised a lot to Luka Doncic, but to get here, like, this is the part of this conversation that I don't think can be exaggerated enough. To get here with even the marginal flexibility that the Lakers have right now, that required punting multiple seasons when you had LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And by punting, I'm not saying that they outright tanked while they had those guys, but they also didn't compete for championships in terms of the caliber of rosters that they forced those guys to try to carry. And it was years of that before Luka shows up. And then it was three transaction cycles later, and they're still saying, just wait, just wait, just wait. Summer of 26, baby. Just you wait. And so if this offseason isn't spectacular, isn't incredible, if the Lakers don't go into next year as a bona fide title contender, and I know that that's a very high bar, but if they don't reach that bar, you guys can go ahead and write in ink. Just go ahead, like, grab a big pack of popcorn. Pour yourself a nice tall glass of whatever adult beverage you prefer. Light up whatever, you know, is legal in your state. Just know that it is going to be a very entertaining episode that day. All right. Let's go another one. Let's run UNLV writes, I mean, is Rob even going to trade both picks? It depends on the return, obviously. I am skeptical of it because he has never done that before. He likes to go into any given year with at least a first rounder in his back pocket to be able to use at the deadline. Just in case prices get lower as you get closer to the deadline than they currently sit right now. I would anticipate actually that he probably does exactly that, unless, you know, some crazy situation arises and it takes like both picks to get like Kessler or both picks to get Durin. The nice thing there is that, like, with Durin and with Kessler, Ayton is like the Kirkland brand version of those players, where he's an okay defensive anchor, he's an okay finisher, he's an okay offensive center, all of those things. Okay, like, he's a good rebounder. He would be the kind of player who, you know, could play next to Lauri Markkanen, could play next to Jaren Jackson Jr., could play in some spots that, you know, could benefit and maybe even help Cade Cunningham a little bit. Like, he's like a stand-in, right? So if negotiations completely fall apart with Jalen Duren and he says, screw you guys, I'm getting ready to sign my qualifying offer unless you send me, you know, or unless you trade me, right? And Denver or Detroit wants to avoid that situation, then I could see Rob putting both picks, you know, into the middle of the table to get one of those two guys. Outside of that, just, you know, with the amount of information in front of me, I don't really see him using both picks. I would probably see him. And if he does use both picks, I think he would probably be looking to get like second round draft capital back so that he can do something at the deadline using draft capital. So that's probably how I would see that plan out. Let's see. Is that all of it? Yeah. Nope. One. We got another one. BT Kingsley writes LD. Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, Peyton Watson, John Collins, Robert Williams with Jackson, Keon Smart, Ayton, JL, Carr, I guess. Or JL. Who's JL? Oh, Jake LaRavia. You didn't mention Thero in that group also. Look, I mean, if the Lakers really want to get out there and completely revitalize the roster, this is kind of like one of the better case scenarios here. You know, it would, I could see it maybe working, but it would be, I would be very nervous about just letting LeBron James and letting Rui Hachimura walk. Like, is that team better? I don't know. I'm curious. I want to know what you guys think. Is that team better than running it back and adding a center? I don't think it is. It's close. And it certainly isn't, all right, bring on OKC caliber, you know? So it's like it's an interesting version of the offseason. A lot of moving parts. A lot would have to go right there for the Lakers. But I do think longer term, that's a better roster than like the one, than like how this roster would age if you just ran it back. So you have that going for you. I said I was going to be on here shortly, and I'm an hour in. You guys, let's see. I was shorthanding blocks. Oh, okay. I was like, I was like, I don't know if you want me to say, I don't know if you want me to use that kind of language talking about an athlete. Okay. Whew, that was funny. That was really good. Kingsley, that's going to be something I repeat to the people who are coming over for the World Cup games tonight. No, I'm like, yeah, he's a better athlete than Rui vertically. So he can, you know, he can get up there to the rim and contest up there. The problem with guys like, you know, guys like this kind of rim protector is it takes so much effort for them to get as high as they need to, that it kind of hurts their second bounce. So if you really contest hard at the rim when somebody's driving there, it oftentimes takes them out of position for a rebound, right? We actually used to see this. A tall version of this is actually like JaVale McGee, where every single time he jumped to contest, Jackson does this too. Every single time they would jump to contest, they would jump as high as they possibly could. And I would always watch JaVale and I'd be like, just jump like half as high. You're tall. You have long arms. You're already really athletic. If you just jump like normal and then land in a, you know, still active position, you could then go get the rebound, defend another shot or something like that. Whereas like with Jason Collins, that's not an option. In order to get as high as he needs to get to contest those shots, he needs to elevate as high as he possibly can. And he winds up being in the air so long, and he winds up landing out of position that, like, you know, it actually puts some strain on your backline defense. So he's a better athlete, but I don't think, like, I would consider his athleticism in addition for them defensively. That's never been what he's particularly good at. That's so funny. It's like, I don't see. All right. I think I'm going to jump out of here. No, I'm not. We have more super comments. Let's see. Brady, I'm looking through here because Brady left just a super comment. So thank you very much, Brady. The next comment I see from you is, I'm about out of hope for the summer. Look, we got a week or so before we start talking like that. Like, things can go in the Lakers' favor to an extent that we can walk away from this and be like, maybe it wasn't the summer that we wanted it to be. Maybe it was like, you know, like, in order for all of the waiting and all of the kicking the can and the promises that they made to Luka, in order for that to be worth it, you need like a 9 out of 10 type of summer. And if they have like an 8, 8.5 type of summer, it's not like devastating and it's not great. I would probably still light them on fire, but like we wouldn't go into the season thinking hope is lost, right? Now, if they have like a 7 or anything worse than a 7, then yeah, I would say fire everybody, full reset, get, you know, Mark Walter, go out and hire the people that you want to hire, and actually build out the organization that we think that the Lakers, or that we know that the Lakers have to be. That's where I would say, So you, Brady also, you know, reiterated it there. I would just say that, like, I get it. Waiting is difficult, especially waiting at a time where, like, viable or foreseeable options seem to be coming off of the board, right? We just had Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, extended the other night, right? Or last night, whatever it was, which took another option off of the board. It's just, I get it. I understand why people are running out of hope, and I understand why people are running out of patience. I myself feel that way very often too. But it's just one of those things where it's like, what's our alternative to just seeing how this plays out? You know, let's just see how this plays out and, you know, deal with the fallout from all of, you know, a potentially disappointing off season or the kind of off season that leaves us hopeless, in that event. It just kind of is what it is. I light them on fire. We apply, like, you know, people hopefully boo when they see Rob Pelinka and, you know, in the hallways there at the Staples Center, whatever, and or in Vegas or whenever he is shown, just to make ownership fully understand the extent to which you know, people were frustrated with the front office, and you kind of go from there, and you hope that they hear the message, they hope that they heed the message. And we move forward. I hopped on here thinking I was going to be here for a half hour, and I have now been here for twice that amount of time. So I'm going to hop out of here. I have to, you know, put the finishing touches on the tri-tip that I'm serving to my company tonight. Let's see. So it's Saturday. I'm going to be back here tomorrow with a mailbag episode or maybe more rumors to react to as well. So if you guys have any questions, leave them in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes, and I'll get to as many of those as I possibly can. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications, all that good stuff. And until tomorrow, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. I'll talk to you then.